Welcome, everyone, to Eagles Power Hour, your official unofficial Eastern Washington affiliate on the Big Sky Podcast Network. Today, we have a little bit of an emergency podcast here. We have some sad news on the basketball side of things. Apparently, I jinxed it in our basketball recap episode because I think it was the day after I released the basketball recap episode, we got news that David Riley has taken the job at Washington State University. Apparently, he wasn't the first choice for Washington State, but he ended up getting hired. Weird situation there. We won't get into that. But right off the bat, I guess I didn't mention this. Again, we're joined by the founder Kyler Neal. We're kind of just going not mega structured, just really quick, like talking about this in general because it's pretty fresh still, and it's kind of a weird situation. Like, we haven't gotten a ton of news. There hasn't been like a ton of guys that have announced all of a sudden that they're entering the transfer portal, which is something that I think a lot of us kind of expected. But really, we'll throw it to you, Kyler. Like, generally, what's the initial feeling, like the gut feeling that you get as a fan of the basketball program when you see that David Riley is leaving?
I mean, we knocked on wood on the podcast episode, so this wasn't supposed to happen. This is BS. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're an Eastern fan, I mean, you should – this sounds horrible to say, but you should just expect this. It is what it is, right? We are in what is considered the lowest-ranking conference on the west side of the Mississippi, pretty much, or at least the west coast, west of the mountains, right? Because you got the WAC, you got the WCC, you got the Big West, all actually ranked a little bit higher than the Big Sky. So if you have a successful coach anywhere, they're probably going to get poached. And we're not like a Montana or a Montana State or even, you know, Weber, Idaho, who can throw quite a bit of money, right? I'm pretty sure David Riley was probably the second lowest paid coach, hovering around $130,000 a year. So the fact that he was this successful right off the bat, it's just a matter of time. I was hoping it would be next year and not this year, just because, all these players, we had a young team and they were all going to come back. And I think they enjoyed playing with each other. So I don't think any of them were going to actually join the portal if Riley was still at the helm. Now, like you just mentioned, we should anticipate seeing some portal entries within the next 48 hours, I would assume, which is kind of a bummer because I think we would have been a nightmare of a team for the Big Sky Conference next year if they all returned, because they would have all been better as well. And they were adding some more talent. So it would have been real fun to watch. But unfortunately, it is what it is, right? Shante leaves. It's okay. We got Riley. Riley took it over and actually, in my opinion, was better in his first few years than Shante was. And it was a complete rebuild. It's not like he got any real talent outside of Magnuson that stuck around, right? It was a full rebuild. So, it's a bummer, but it is what it is. This is Eastern Washington University, and the fact that we've been this successful in football, basketball, with our budget the way it is and our, you know, fandom support, the fact we're able to still compete at the top of the Big Sky a majority of the time is pretty fantastic, and it's because we found some great coaches. So I'm optimistic for the future, and congratulations, David Riley, man. You earned it.
For sure. And I mean, you can't blame the guy. Like, from the numbers I heard floated around, like the BSPN chat and stuff like that, it sounds like he's potentially tripling his paycheck to do the same job. It's only an hour and a half from where he's been coaching this whole time. Like, it makes all the sense in the world for him. And as much as Eastern fans that don't like Wazoo want to say, like, oh, he just took a step down because Eastern beat them, whatever, it's a step up. And even though they're basically a Mountain West WCC school now, like it's still a step up. It's still Wazoo. It's not a P5 job anymore, but it's still definitely a step up in career wise. And you can't not take three times your paying wage for the same
job. And it's just one of those things where you don't know when the next opportunity is going to happen. Yeah. You don't know if something happens and all of a sudden people figure you out as a coach, right? When you get an opportunity like this, even though WSU is kind of a dumpster fire, we don't know where they're going to land, it's still a good opportunity. I think WSU is going to be better in the WCC than they were in the Pac-12. So now they actually have the resources to compete with those schools outside of Gonzaga, where the Pac-12, they just couldn't compete resource-wise with anyone. So you know what? This is probably a good move for David Riley, pay-wise, probably for his career. And I think he can excel. So, yeah, you got to just – you got to support it. It is what it is. People are online or – Eastern fans online are kind of pissing me off because, you know, they're like, ah, good, we're – the grass is greener. Go to WSU. We'll finally win a tournament game. Come on, guys. I mean, this was a very successful coach right off the bat. Sure, Boise didn't go our way, but sometimes grass is not always greener for a team like Eastern Washington. We'll have to see what happens. I am optimistic, though.
You just got to look at the graphics. 62 wins as a head coach in 3 years. He won 2 Big Sky regular season titles, 2 Big Sky coaches of the year. Like,
fantastic.
I don't care what you say about his record in March. That is a damn good stint at Eastern Washington. 13 years, 3 years as the head coach. Like, Riley does it the right way, and maybe some people don't like him because he can be a little whiny with the refs, but, like, dude, he's a good dude. Yeah. He does it the right way. Who cares? And he wins games, man. And, I mean, was there a little bit of unfinished business when it comes to March? Yes, 100%. But also, you got to think of it from a career perspective. If you're looking to hire this guy, how much more does he really have to prove at Eastern Washington? It's only in the tournament, right? And what does another 20-win season do to his stock? It probably doesn't make it rise that much higher. And I think of it this way: if he loses another first-round game in the tournament, I think his stock just goes down. Like, 3 straight years, that's when you start going like, hey, there's something wrong here. So, I mean, thinking of it from both ends, like, it made all the sense in the world for him. And it's unfortunate because he clearly wasn't the first choice for Wazoo. And so we should have gotten a hold on to him. But sometimes that's just how it goes. And, I mean, I wish him good luck, man, because he's a good dude. And, I mean, at least it's Wazoo and it's a program that you don't – I mean, if you're living on this side of the state, usually you don't hate them. So, yeah. I mean, some people do, but – you know, it's a local program still. It's not like he went to, at least it's not Pacific or Pepperdine or whatever down there. Those, like, true dumpster fires that could have been a much worse situation and a much harder place to root for him, Portland. But, you know,
well, that's,
I can't blame him.
Because that was one of the things in the Big Sky Podcast Network chat. We were talking about, like, Pacific was interested in David Riley. And that's where I don't agree with a coach like David Riley going. Sure, you're going to make double the cash, but you're not going to turn that program around. You're not going to compete with the top half of the WCC. So then you could be stagnant, or in a few years, you go back down to the Big Sky. Or at least with WSU, it doesn't seem like that's probably going to be the case. So,
you know, hopefully for him. I don't know, man. I don't have a ton more to add on Coach Riley. Hell of a coach, man. And
yeah,
I guess we'll start looking forward a little bit here. We don't really have any news instantly of any like big time players entering the portal yet. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of expecting it to just be a floodgate as soon as, you know, as soon as he announced it, kind of like it was with the Leggins situation. But, you know, we'll see. I don't know how many guys are going to go down with them or what, and how many guys are committed to the program, and how many guys are just going to, you know, hop in the portal and see where those opportunities are gonna come from, because they're gonna come.
And this is gonna sound maybe messed up, where a couple of players may not want to hear it. There's probably only 1 to 2 players on our roster that I think, you know, would actually make a starting WSU player. Like, right, Coward, he could probably start at WSU. Probably not really anyone else. So, I mean, if you're leaving to try and follow Riley, probably not the best option, but whenever there's a coaching change, you're just going to see players enter. I would be very shocked if a bulk of the players stayed. It's just a different time, right? If it was 5-6 years ago, sure, we'd probably keep a bulk of them. But as of right now, I mean, I hope they stay. I'm not banking on it.
Yeah. You know what's kind of wild? Like, I'm just thinking of the I think it was the last year, the Shante years, They had a couple of guards. They had like Mike Meadows and then maybe Mason Landeck was on the squad. Both Mason Landeck and Mike Meadows have played on a different basketball team every year of their career so far. Yeah, those guys started their careers.
Well, yeah. Not every year, but I mean, pretty dang close. Oklahoma and then now Virginia. So, yeah.
I mean, it's wild where college basketball is at, and that's kind of why I don't really pay attention anymore, because it's just hard to keep up. But, you know, we're expecting this to be a very different team next year, potentially, unless the hire is internal. This kind of gets us into our next question. Like, do you really expect them to go internal? Because, I mean, looking at the staff now, there isn't, like, one guy that screams at you like, this is the next coach. Because that, I mean, that kind of was David Riley. Like,
yeah.
We as soon as Shante was gone, we're like, okay, David Riley. Like, he's been here for 12 years or whatever. How many, I guess it would have been like 9 years at that point. But there isn't that guy on the squad right now. Do you think they go internal?
The only person that maybe they'd go internal, I think, would be like Ricardo, right? But there's no like person who's been here for a long duration who's earned it. And that sounds messed up to say because, you know, if you're an assistant coach, yeah, you've probably earned the right to be a head coach somewhere. But you're looking at some of these resumes and it's – I'm not going to be mad if one of them becomes head coach and I'll you know, support them no matter what. But there's nothing on this list that screams like, hey, this could be our next guy. I would love to be proven wrong because I like the staff we have. But, I would hope they're not only just – selecting someone internal. I want them to at least open up the floodgates, see who you can find, maybe an assistant from a pretty successful other mid-major who's been around for a while, maybe who knows recruiting on the West Coast or international. That is a nice thing about, and I didn't mean to say Ricardo, I meant to say Rosato. So I apologize. I was at just a restaurant and the guy right next to me, his name was Ricardo, so it's still in my head. But I know like Pedro has a lot of international headway, so that's nice because we've had some success with the international side of recruiting. So I don't know. I'd either want someone. I don't know. I don't know. I just hope they interview quite a bit of people and put the right person in place. And I trust Tim Collins.
Yeah, me too. And I haven't heard a bad thing about Tim Collins yet in his year and a half, 2 years of
being fantastic
AD. Such a nice dude. Dude is always smiling. Literally saw him at spring practice the other day, like when the news broke, just like walking around, like not like very casual guy. So, you know, I have faith that he's going to make a good hire. I don't like when you look at the screen here, there isn't a guy that screams at you like that's the next head coach. Coach Brown was the guy that I thought like initially just because we've seen him a lot. Like he liked to do like the halftime interviews and stuff for TV and all that stuff. He's only been here for a year. Same with Coach Brady. He's only been there for a year. Pedro has been here 2 or 3 years now. But, like, he was the most vocal guy on the bench, probably, of these three, or at least the most, like, visibly vocal when you're watching from TV. He seemed like he had a lot to do with the defensive side of things. Coach Donald Brady is the only one of the bunch that has prior head coaching experience, at least in the U.S. in college basketball. Donald Brady was the head coach at, I think it was Bellevue College. Hold up. Let me make sure I get that right. Yes.
Wasn't someone with a D2 squad?
Was there? So Coach Brady was the head coach for 5 years at Bellevue College. It's a JUCO school. He had, you know, some good success. He was 47-17 his last two seasons there. Good team in the NWAC. That's where, you know, Wenatchee Valley, I believe Big Ben's in there. A bunch of those smaller schools. Let me look. I'm not sure. So Blake Fernandez has kind of done the David Riley route where he was started as like a GA, then director of basketball ops, and then an assistant coach last year. But he, you know, he's only been an assistant coach for 1 year. So, you know, maybe if he was there a little longer, it would be more of a like thinking that's the guy. But I don't know. There, to me, there isn't a guy that screams at me like this is the next head coach. And so
let's take Jim Shaw from WSU, who was passed over.
Shoot, man, I'm really open to anything. Just looking, Coach Brown wasn't a head coach anywhere. Assistant coach at Denver, assistant coach at San Diego.
I think I was wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. It's possible that I just missed something. Video coordinator with the Pistons for a couple of years there for Coach Brown. But, you know, I mean, I have faith that there's going to be a good hire made. Tim Collins' background is a basketball guy. And so I got faith he'll make a good hire. And I know I've said that like 8 times. But,
yeah,
internal or external, I really think it'd be okay. I think if you go internal, you keep the a little bit more Eastern basketball culture. You keep a couple of the guys there, but it's not a short-term hire. It's a long-term hire in the eyes of an athletic director, even though it's been pretty short-term the last couple of times.
Yeah.
You know, I'd really, if I was betting, I would probably bet internal just because of that's Eastern's way. I don't remember the last time they made an external hire in men's basketball. Would that be, that would be, I can't even think of it. But when you look at football and men's basketball, the two like big sports that you're going to pay those coaches the most, usually they've gone internal for years and years now. So
yeah,
I don't necessarily see a reason not to, but you never know. And I mean, I wouldn't be upset if they went external, that's for sure. Because there's lots of intriguing names out there. I'm not nearly as familiar with the basketball world, so I wouldn't know very many guys outside of the building that would be candidates. But I mean, we'll keep you posted on things that we hear, and we'll hit on this in some of the spring football episodes coming up here. But I mean, we're already getting close up here to 20 minutes, so we'll probably. I mean, do you have any final things that you want to talk about?
Nope, I got nothing. I mean, this is just college athletics, and it's college athletics at the lower end of the D1 sphere. So it is what it is.
It is what it is, and that's being an Eastern fan. Like, there's no point in getting frustrated anymore, guys. Yep. Like, that's reality. If you're going to get frustrated every time a coach is poached, you're not going to have very much fun being a fan of this.
No, because, I mean – look at even WSU's coaches and AD got poached, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is just, it happens at every single level. Not everyone's going to have a Gonzaga. Even UW's coaches will get poached. So again, yeah, expect this if you're an Eastern fan. It's fine.
Uh-huh. I mean, it's reality. It's okay. It's not some massive deal to lose everything about. Of course, it's disappointing because, shoot, man, everyone was coming back next year. Like, this team was going to run through the Big Sky. But
it's going to be fun.
Hey, man, there's nothing to say a new guy isn't going to come in here and have the same success because, with the transfer portal era and hey, man, like, people talk trash about Cheney all the time, but Cheney and Eastern has had some of the top-level talent the last, 10 years in the Big Sky. Absolutely. And you could say what you want to say about recruiting to Cheney is going to be hard. Apparently, it's not. So, screw all you people, and there's no reason to believe Eastern's going to become some shitty program because David Riley's gone.
No, and the portal nowadays just makes it easier to rebuild real fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the reality of it. Portal gives and portal takes. So it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, with that, I think we don't really have anything else to hit on. Yeah, no, that's it. I'm gonna be working on a spring football episode here later this week. I'm gonna be out of town this weekend, but we'll try to get something out maybe Friday morning, maybe something like that. Just something for some people. There's some interesting stuff that happened at spring football practice that we'll talk a little bit about on the podcast. Probably another shorter episode, but I think that's all we got, guys. Go Weegs. Well, we had a little bit of a change of plan. So the original plan was to release this episode, the David Riley leaving episode with Kyler earlier today. We ended up getting some news about an Eastern basketball player entering the transfer portal. So unfortunately, forward Casey Jones has entered the transfer portal. He was entering his senior season. He averaged something like around 10, 11 points for Eastern Washington last year, started 31 of our 32 games. He's a ball player, man. He's the ultimate infuriating guy to play against because he flops a lot and he just draws a ton of contact, but he had a highlight reel that was probably 2-3 minutes straight of just straight dunks. But we're definitely going to miss Casey Jones because that dude, he's an absolute player. And I mean, the only assumption can be that's the first of many to enter the transfer portal. You know, unfortunate, we're going to miss Casey Jones. I really wish I was going to be able to get up to a goggles night, but unfortunately I wasn't able to. But moving on, we have some spring football to talk about here. So, you know, I was able to make it up to Cheney for day one of pads on April 2nd, and it was a really fun night. I was able to, you know, hear some pads pop, and they didn't go super crazy. Again, it was only day one, but I was able to check out some things and keep some eyes on some position groups that I was excited to see. We're not going to do like a super in detail about everything today. We're going to kind of talk about two position groups today. I guess I'm kind of adopting the Tubbs of the Club model just because I've been watching them a lot. But we're going to talk about probably one position group that really impressed me on either side of the ball. And, you know, talking about things more as a whole in general, how I'm feeling looking forward as of now. So a few notes, still a lot of guys, a lot of first string guys on the defensive side of things, not participating in practice, not suiting. Amani Williams, a projected starter. He's definitely going to be a starting linebacker in 2024. He hasn't been practicing. Ben Voigtlander, he's a Spokane guy that's going to be a starter at defensive end this year. He has not been practicing. A few other notable ones, Derek Tomasini, a guy who started games at middle linebacker last year. He has not been practicing. He's been walking around on crutches. He was walking around no crutches on Tuesday, but he has been on crutches for a while, so I'm not sure what exactly is going on there, but he has not been practicing. A couple other notable ones, Armani Orange, he was a starting safety for Eastern Washington. He has not been practicing, and a little bit of a concerning one, Efton Chisholm was not a full participant at practice on Tuesday. You know, he seemed fine. Like, he was in full pads and running around and stuff. I don't know how much of it was a preventative thing or if he maybe just tweaked something a little bit. It's not a big deal. He was still out there running around, not running hard, but running around, catching balls, saying hi to the kids on the sidelines. And, you know, he was around the team participating, just limited, not full participation. He didn't go in the team periods or anything like that. I think he tried to sneak into a drill or two and kind of got an earful from one of the coaches. So my assumption is he tweaked the hammy or something, but he'll be fine. Looking, you know, to long-term forward. That's mainly the important things. A few personnel things that I kind of covered. The start at the linebackers that took most of the reps that this would be on Tuesday was Miles Majowski. Excuse me. Oh, wow. Miles Majowski, I believe is how his mom let me know how to spell that or how to pronounce that. That is linebacker number 59, excuse me. He has been kind of taking over that more of a wing linebacker role. You know, one of the quicker linebackers, him and Samurai Anderson. He's a redshirt freshman, number 47. Those two guys have been rotating in at that will linebacker spot. And the more Mike linebacker has been a pretty much a mainstay of Adam Cohen, the UCLA transfer. He got some time, a lot of time last year as well. But I don't know if either any of those three are penciled in as starters right away. I think that position is very much up for grabs. The linebacker spot is definitely, you know, I think Amani Williams has one of those spots taken for sure. And that's going to be the position that Miles Majowski Majowski is how it's pronounced. My bad, Miss Majowski. Miles Mayoski, the linebacker, and Samurai Anderson, the spot that they have been rotating in, that's likely going to be Imani Williams' spot. And the Mike linebacker, I would assume it's Cohen, but, you know, we'll see. It just kind of depends on how things go the rest of spring and going into fall camp, if there's any portal additions, stuff like that. You know, looking at spring practice as a whole, like, I think the big question is just generally, how do we look? Like, is it going to be another horrible defense? I do not think they're going to be flat out horrible bottom of the Big Sky this next year. I really don't think that's going to happen. Do I think they're going to be the best defense in the conference? Hell no, not even close. You know, there's some other teams in this conference that have ridiculous defense, top in the country defenses. We're not going to be that. That's not Eastern Washington as of now. I don't know if we have the talent for that right now. You know, and we're just not there quite yet as a program. But I think the offense is going to be damn good. You know, I think both units are going to be improved. When you kind of think of things, this is something that Coach Best said in his press conference. Like, when you look at the progression of the last 2 years, 2022, we were getting our asses kicked. Like, you know, losing a guy like Berrier and losing all the talent that we did that year, it's tough to replace. But in 2022, there really was not a lot of one-score games that, you know, that were available there for Eastern to be able to pick off versus a better team. I mean, you look at the Montana State game, and then other than that, it really wasn't a lot of close games. Then you move on to 2023, and we had, what, like 8 one-score games, something ridiculous like that. A lot of close games, and a really tough schedule to go along with that. And we ended up not coming out on top in about half of those one-score games and a couple other games that should have been, you know, probably a lot closer than they were. I'm thinking of like a Portland State game, like a, I don't know, maybe an Idaho game. Games that, you know, Eastern had a chance there to make some noise and wasn't quite able to, but that's okay. Looking forward to 2024, I think this team isn't going to be a super dominant team in the Big Sky. That's for sure. But they have a chance to be a very good team. And you know, when you look at kind of just the overall schedule of this team, it's relatively favorable compared to what we had last year. That's definitely for sure there. Because last year, man, we had one of the toughest schedules in the entire country when it came to out of conference and in all kinds of things. There we go. When you look at this schedule, Monmouth and Drake, those are two winnable FCS opponents. Southeastern Louisiana, all three of those games are winnable games, 100%. Monmouth and SLU are kind of similarly-ish teams to Eastern, where there are a lot of offense, not a lot of defense. It should be some fun games. Nevada is one of the most winnable FBS opponents you can possibly play. You know, that's going to be a close, tough game. But then our Big Sky slate can be tough. We have a tough stretch of Montana, Sac State, Davis, Idaho, and Montana State. You can go 500 in that stretch of 5-6 games. You're looking really good. You know, you're looking at, you know, an 8-3 or a 9-3 or an 8-4. And so, you know, I really do think this Eastern team has a chance to be a lot better. And look at the playoffs realistically, looking forward to 2024. But we're not there yet. You know, we have the chance to be that team, but I don't know if we are right this second. And I think there's a lot of growth to be made by young guys on this team. There's a lot of young guys and a lot of it's an interesting mix of old guys and young guys. You have a lot of guys thinking about the defense in particular. You have a guy like Darian Sampson, a guy like Brock Harrison, a guy like Jacob Newsom. These guys that are, what, 5th, 6th year seniors that have a lot of experience, and Adam Cohen even. And then you have a lot of these young guys mixed in there. You have an Oyok at the corner. He's a younger guy with not a lot of experience. You have a guy like a Samurai Anderson, a Miles Mayoski, like those guys that have not gotten a ton of playing time yet, not a lot of experience yet, younger guys that are going to be stepping into bigger roles. And you look at the defensive line, you have Justice Lualu and some other guys down there that will be getting a lot of playing time this year that maybe they got a little bit last year, but they're going to be young. They're going to have dumb mistakes. And that's kind of what I've seen in practice. it really, in the two practices I've seen, you can see the growth happening on the defensive side of the ball. That's for damn sure. You can see these guys, oh, play one, play two, they make a dumb mistake, they adjust, they make that play. And they're playing a lot more free. Like, if you listen to our episode with Coach Sanders, he's saying he wants these guys to play free. He wants these guys to play aggressive and to play fast. And that kind of, we definitely were not doing that last year. Towards the end of the year, these guys were trying to be too perfect, trying to fit their gap exactly right. And it's like, hey, you just got to go make a play. And that's what I've definitely seen so far. You know, there's still the odd, you know, we're still practicing. It's a really good defense. And so there's the odd big play that springs out. But overall, I'm happy with this defense, and I think they are improving. It's not a 100% flip. No, this is not going to be the best big sky rushing defense in the country. Hell no. But what I will say is they are a better rushing defense, and that's for sure. You know, and this is without some of their better guys on the team still. You know, you think of a Voigtlander, a projected starter. You think of a Williams, projected starter. You think of a Tomasini, maybe even a projected starter. Maybe a Connor O'Farrell, he's not practicing. You think of an Armani Orange, a projected starter. So a lot of guys out there that you know, we aren't quite there. And so this defense is very young, a lot of reserves in there so far this spring. And they don't look bad, in my opinion. They have their moments where it's like, what the hell was that? But also, those moments are typically when we're playing two-hand touch. And boy, when they went live, boys, like, this defense was hitting. And it was fun to watch. One of the really fun moments, so early in practice on Tuesday, they were going to wrap up. They're not taken to the ground. They're just going to pop them and then stop. You know, they're just so you know, we don't need the extra hits onto the ground and stuff like that on the body. So we're going to wrap up and then let go and blow the whistle, whatever. Well, one of our running backs, I'm not going to hit on the name, didn't exactly agree with that, I think. And he just, when the defense slows down to wrap up and then let go, because that's what we're doing in practice, he just ran through one of our safeties. Absolutely truck-sticked him, took it to the house, got everyone excited. Cool. I'm fine with that, but that, I mean, we're going to just wrap up, and cool. They kind of talked to him and talked to him about it. And they're like, hey, we got to be smart. That's not what we're doing. Whatever. Come back. He truck stick number 41. He's been one of our starting safeties. I think it's Isaiah Redford. He's been getting a lot of time as a safety so far this year, or so far in the spring, especially with a guy like Armani Orange out as a starter. And after that play, a couple plays later, they ended up going live, going to the ground. We're going to tackle. We're going to hit. And that same guy, number 41, Isaiah Redford, I believe is his name. Isaac Redford. He comes and makes an absolute hit sticks, levels one of our receivers, breaks up a pass, just a big time hit stick. Ball pops up and out, incomplete pass. And the whole defensive sideline just gets so excited. This defense is going to play with some energy this year. And, hey, maybe they give up a couple of big plays, because that's going to happen. I'm going to be honest, like, that's going to happen. Our offense has been able to do that a couple of times. And, our offense is explosive as hell. But, you know, the big plays are going to happen against this defense. But, you know, really, I think they are going to be better. I think the young guys, more athletic, they're going to come up and be good. And there's a lot more variation in the looks coverage-wise, in the looks, you know, blitz-wise, and things like that that are going to confuse teams when they try to throw the ball. There's going to be some quarterbacks seeing ghosts. And our defensive front's pretty stout, in my opinion. You know, if I was going to pit the weakness of the defense, it's still probably the linebackers. But I like that we're getting – the pass rush is getting there, and just really every aspect of this defense looks improved so far this spring. To me, they look better. They look more talented. They look like they're more excited, more energy, and more, you know, enthusiasm on the sideline. I think this defensive line is going to be a sneaky one of the better in the conference, and people aren't going to want to admit that because it's Eastern, but I really do think that this defensive line is going to be pretty good overall. Justice Uwalu has looked great at practice. He's going to be a sophomore next year. A guy like, 98. I cannot remember his name for the life of me. Number 98. Let me pull it up. Jaira Lia Pipitele or something like that. A guy that I don't know how to pronounce his name. He's looked really good in practice. A big, big body. 6'3", 322. Jacob Newsom has looked excellent in practice. He's made some like really nice plays. And so I really think that the both trenches on this team, offensive and defensive line, are going to be a strength in 2024, which is something that I don't know if we've said that very often for Eastern Washington team. And it's a lot different. And it's kind of Coach Best's way of, you know, kind of shifting from, you know, the 2010s Eastern Washington teams to the 2020s Eastern Washington teams. We haven't had that success, but we're trying to build more of an identity of being a physical team, a physical football team with some attitude. You know, Coach Best wants guys to have an edge. That's something that has been a theme in his press conferences so far. He wants guys to have an edge. He wants guys to play hard. He doesn't want us to be friends with guys. And hey, man, that's something that reminds me of the early 2000s teams. And I was a little kid then, so I don't remember it quite as vividly as some other people, but that was kind of the attitude of some of those Paul Wolf teams and those teams that were kind of led by the defenses. I think of the 2010 national championship team, even teams that were led by studs on defense and getting there. I think that's where we're headed, at least now with the Coach Best and kind of what we have going on right now. So we're going to hit on the two position groups really quick. And then we'll get out of here. We'll try to keep this whole episode as a whole under an hour. We'll go offense first. The position group that impressed me a lot, they really impressed me at practice on Tuesday. And this isn't just because our defensive front isn't great. No, this offensive line is going to be really good. They look like they have improved a lot. And, I mean, most of them were juniors and seniors last year, most of this offensive line. That when I think about the lineup, almost everyone was a junior or a senior last year and either came back as a fifth or sixth year senior or whatever. They all look better. They all look more athletic and they all look like they're able to move guys off the ball a little bit better. And it's tough to move our defensive front off the ball, man. That's something that most teams have not been able to do. Nobody knows that or realizes that unless they really dive into the film. But our middle two guys have been stout dudes the last 2-3 years. You know, Newsom, Pipitele, Justice Lualu, like all these guys, they're big 300-pounders in the middle that are tough to move. And they eat up space. And they've done a good job of that. But the thing with this offensive line last year that I was screaming from my couch saying, come on, you got to go do this. Getting hands on the second level, getting hands on linebackers, getting hands on safeties up the field and making those plays, making those blocks that allow us to spring a 1 or 2 yard gain into a 5 to 7 to 10 to 20 yard gain. And that happens by getting hands on the second level, by getting hands on backers, double teaming up to backers, double teaming up to safeties, double teaming up in the second, third level. That was something that they really struggled with last year. And they had their moments like the Weber State game. They did a great job of that, this offensive line. But, you know, it's a big, big offensive line, a lot of 320 pounders. So it's tough for these guys to move like that. If they look like they've really stepped it up in terms of athleticism, one guy that has really, really impressed me so far, Wyatt Hansen, we all knew he was a good offensive lineman. He's been a great offensive lineman for Eastern Washington for 5-6 years now. But last year he had his inconsistencies playing left tackle. That's not necessarily his, strongest position or his natural position. Maybe I think he's more of a natural guard. He said that himself on the Eagles, on flight report. He's looked a lot better at tackle this year, or so far in practice anyways. He's gotten beat. I mean, it happens. That's normal. Getting beat by a guy like Brock Harrison, who's been his matchup most reps, it happens. But he looks much more consistent, and he's been doing a great job getting up to the second level. Overall, I think this entire offensive line looks more athletic, and it really does seem like that was a big – a point of emphasis this offseason, like getting more athletic, getting quicker, better, you know, better feet, and being able to get our hands up on these second level defenders. And really, like, even watching one-on-ones and stuff like that, the offensive line actually, so I'll get into this really quick. So in between, they do two separate periods of team scrimmage where you're going and tackling offense versus defense. In the middle, they do a 1 minute, they call it one minute media. And then they do a competition. The loser of this competition, offense versus defense, has to, you know, do pushups or something, or run or something like that. Right. So Tuesday's competition was offense versus defense, offensive line versus defensive line in front of the whole team, one-on-ones. The you know, Coach Best is the referee. You have 3 point whatever seconds to get to the bag. If you don't get to the bag, the offensive line wins. If you get to the bag, the defensive line wins. They did this, and the offensive line did end up winning. And I was pretty impressed by it, because it's tough to be an offensive lineman in one-on-ones there, because you know, you don't have guys where they normally are. And, you know, it's pretty easy for a defensive lineman to be able to kind of use more space than they actually would have. And it can be tough for a bigger defensive lineman, say like a Wyatt Hansen guy that's bigger, maybe not the most athletic dude you've ever seen in the world. And it's a really tough situation for those guys to be able to block well in those one-on-ones. And they were making blocks. Obviously, there was, you know, it was close. It was about a 5-6 at the end, or 4-5 or something like that. But the offensive line did end up winning. And the offensive line looked good. They're really, to me, they look like one of the most improved units on the entire offense. And I think this is not like a discredit to these guys, but I think they were this close to making this offense just go last year. You know, they just struggled consistently getting, you know, consistently running the ball. And I think that's going to be a part of our offense in 2024 that people don't see coming, is running the ball. Tuna looks improved. You have 26. Oh man, what is his name? He's a JUCO transfer. Came with Malik Dotson. He's going to be one of the rotating and running backs. He's going to get a lot more playing time in 2024, and he's one of the guys that had a very nice play in practice, very nice run. Same with Tuna. They both had a couple nice, like a nice run or two. But I think the run game is going to be a big improvement in 2024, especially with this offensive line being better when it comes to overall blocking and getting up to second level, being more athletic, as well as when you think about our tight end. Our tight end is going to be Jet Carpenter, number 85. He's been taking most of the reps at the Y position, the old Blake Goble spot. He's been taking most of the reps there. He's a much, like, no disrespect to Blake Goble, but Jet Carpenter is a better blocker than Blake Goble was. And, you know, he's made a couple of nice catches too. You also have 44. That would be, Austin York. He plays the F position, comes in playing that F position. He's a very good player, great leader, but he's a good blocker as well. And so I think this whole roster is a lot more offensively, a lot more favorable to the run, in my opinion, this year. Or at least they look a lot more favorable to being a better run offensive team, I guess I should say. As well as with guys like Michael Wortham, with guys like Jared Taylor, the quarterback run game is going to be a big part of this team. And I think, like I said, it starts with the guys up front, and I think this offensive line is going to take a massive jump from what they were last year. They were okay. They're relatively consistent, but they just couldn't quite get to the second level, at the level they needed to be an elite offensive line. I think they have a chance to be able to be a lot better there just overall as a unit in 2024. Moving on to the defensive side of the ball, I was pretty impressed with our secondary. You know, the secondary is typically a pretty, you know, it's known for being the strength of the Eastern Washington defense most years. The secondary last year is actually pretty good, but you do lose a couple of pieces. You have a couple of injured pieces, and when it came to team period, they look good, man. They really do a great job grasping the coverage side of this Coach Sanders defense. And it's, the coverage isn't necessarily like a complete shift from what it was under under Jeff Kopp, but there's a lot more wrinkles to it than there was under Kopp. So we've been running, the Seagull defense has been running a lot more split coverages, more man coverage, and more kind of just weird split coverages where you have, you draw a line down the middle of the center and the quarterback, and the receivers on one side are covered by the DBs on that side, and the receivers on the other side are covered by the DBs on that side, and you have two completely separate coverages going on either side. And I've seen it where we have man on one side and we have cover two on the other side. You have cover four and cover two. You'll have a cover three and a cover one, like all sorts of crazy crap that, you know, you don't typically see a lot of schools do. A lot of schools like to keep it for the most part pretty simple. Cover three, cover four, cover two. And Eastern's doing a lot of the split field cover stuff, which can be kind of complicated and tough for young guys to grasp. But a lot of the young guys have done a pretty good job. You know, the soft spot of the Seagull defense all year, like so far in the pass game, has been right up the middle. And in the run game, it's been the edges. And that's kind of been a pretty, you know, it's been a trend for the most part. But I think the secondary has a chance to be one of the better ones in the conference. And it's going to be tough to be better than, like, Idaho's secondary is going to be one of the most elite secondaries in the country again this year. But they're going to give some quarterbacks some fits. Like I was saying earlier, like, the way that this secondary is being run when it comes to the calls and when it comes to overall the talent on the field, they do a really good job at, you know, creating confusion, creating weird looks pre-snap, weird looks post-snap that a quarterback might just be like, what the hell is that? Sometimes you'll have random dudes like a freaking Brock Harrison in coverage. And some people might be like, why is Brock Harrison in coverage and not passing or not rushing the passer? Well, it's a blitz scheme. We have blitz coming from the other side. You're using your linebackers as blitzers. You're dropping out a defensive end. Maybe you're catching a quarterback off guard. They're not going to expect that defensive end to, you know, drop into coverage. And all of a sudden, you have a nice pick because he doesn't know there's a guy there. You know, stuff like that. I think this defense is going to be similar to some, like most of the great Eastern Washington defenses or the defenses of the great teams. This defense is going to be based off of momentum and turnovers, forcing turnovers, making big plays, and getting excited. That's going to be the lifeblood and what makes this defense tick in 2024 and looking forward. You know, some of the personnel things with the secondary, it was mostly people that we know. You know, you have the base has been, for the most part, nickel. Your nickel cornerback has been Cage Genk. He's been a mainstay there the last 2 years. He's a ball player. He's a really good player. He's impressive for the size he is, the way he plays a game. Your kind of strong safety has been Kentrell Williams most of the year. The free safety, it's been a little bit of a rotation between a few guys. So 41 has been taking most of the snaps with the ones, which is he came in, he's listed as a cornerback, but Isaac Redford, he was taking a few snaps. He's taken a number of snaps with the ones at safety. He's been looking okay. He looks like a young player, but he's been, you know, up and down. Not the most consistent guy I've ever seen in the world, but he also is relatively young. The safety position looks a little bit, maybe a little bit thin, with a guy like Armani Orange hurt, and I have not seen Drew Carter on the field. I didn't see him Tuesday anyways. If I'm remembering right, I could totally just be missing him. I haven't seen Derek Ganter. Again, I could be totally missing them because I have been known to do that. But the secondary is going to be good. They have depth, and they honestly, I think they're going to be the strength of this defense. I also think I think the front and the back good. It's the middle. It's linebackers. That's the question mark. And I'm really hoping for those guys to step up. I think a Miles Mayoski, a guy like Sam Anderson, another Monty Williams, maybe even a Bishop Blakeney. These are guys that can all step up and have some good years this year and show their upside. And you know, hey, maybe we have a portal addition. I definitely would not hate that, to have a nice portal addition at middle linebacker, a guy similarly style to a 20 from last year. I'm blanking on his name for some reason, but you know, someone that you know will be a bit of an enforcer there that will be a little bit more athletic maybe. But you know, I think that's the one thing with this defense is the speed isn't quite the same speed when it comes to the middle linebackers and the linebackers, as it is with every other position group, comparing it to other teams that I've seen other practices and stuff like that. And that's why I think that might be a little bit of a weakness still. But I think they're growing. I think the talent is there, and I think the coaching staff is there and better. I think it's being ran better already. More efficient, more energy, and hey man, they're making plays. They had no picks in Tuesday's practice from what I saw in the first practice I attended. Transfer safety Mikel Broussard. He's a guy that we thought might be getting more playing time at safety. He's been repping with the twos so far at safety, which is a little interesting, but nothing too major. He got in with the ones a number of times as well. He had a nice pick in day one, but you know, he didn't play a ton in day two. And day two, there was no picks, but there was the offense ran kind of a weird trick play, and we were able to the defense was able to, I say we because I'm a defensive guy, my bad, but the defense was able to kind of tip a weird like a trick play thingy, and it just happened to pop right into Justice Luolo's hands, and he took it back to the house, and the whole defense exploded, the whole sideline exploded. And after that point, this defense was different. Like, there's such a team that once they have a big play, they're focused, they're in, they're energized, and they play how they need to play to be a really successful team. It's just getting them to that point. So, you know, again, overall, I think this team's improved. I think this team's going to be a step up from last year. And I think the question is, how much of a step up is it? And how do we perform in those close one-possession games? That's going to be kind of the question, and it goes a lot into kind of defining Coach Best's legacy as the Eastern head coach. When it's the end of the day, like, three losing seasons in a row isn't gonna cut it at Eastern Washington, and so I mean, I think everyone really has hope that we get it turned around, just to keep Coach Best around, because we all love that guy, man. He is such an awesome dude. He is an EKG, like the definition of an EKG, and he knows what's best. He's been around it all, and so really hoping we can step it up and get a nice winning season in the program again for Coach Best there. Well, this is actually going to be the end of the episode now. You know, originally it was going to be with the Kyler thing, but you guys got to listen to me ramble about football for a nice 30 minutes. So yeah. Alrighty. Well, that is going to be the end of the episode actually now. Thank everyone for listening. Get out to spring football. We're T-minus 22 days away from the spring game. That will be April 26th, 2024. Get down to Cheney for that. The red and white game, I believe it's at like 6 or 7 at night. Should be a fun one. It's a Friday night game. Friday night lights a little bit. Should hopefully be nice weather that late in April. You never know with Cheney, but yeah, should be a fun time. I'm going to be there. If anyone sees me, feel free to talk to me. I can be a little awkward in person because I'm just not a very social guy, but hey, I'm always open to talk to people. Alrighty. That's all we got for Eagles Power Hour today, guys. Sad news with Casey Jones, but excited with spring football coming up, and we're going to try to give you guys a little bit of like some weekly updates when it comes to basketball and football stuff. So yeah, I think that's all we got, guys. Thank you guys for listening, and go Eagles.